Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a tough Game 5 loss for the Nashville Predators. They fall 3-2 in overtime to the Carolina Hurricanes, now trailing the series 3-2, heading back home for Game 6 tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Joe Rexroad, a big moment in the game last night was a play in the second period. It looked like the Hurricanes had tied the game. Jacob Slavin takes the shot, and it bounces in off of Ryan Johansson's leg, and there's this mad scramble in front of the net. It goes in the net, and I'm thinking to myself, oh boy, the Predators, they've been playing relatively well up until this point. They've done a pretty good job of keeping the Hurricanes away from the net, and then all of a sudden it looks like the game is tied 2-2, and then John Hines makes a decision that he's not made all season long, and that is to challenge the play for goaltender interference. Now, I will be the first one to admit, when I saw him challenge that play and I looked at the replay for the first time, I even sent a text message to the two of you and said, I don't know if this is a good idea from John Hines here, because remember, if you challenge this play and you get it wrong, you're going to the box. You're going to be shorthanded, and you're putting Carolina on the power play. So I saw the initial replay and said, whew, I don't know about that. And then the overhead feed came out, and it shows Fogle making contact with UC Saros in the crease. Roman Josi is going in trying to box him out, and he makes contact with UC Saros as well. Saros is down and out. The puck trickles in, and Saros is kind of spun around in the crease and is not able to get over and make the save. They go to review and ultimately decide that it is goaltender interference. John Hines wins the challenge, and the Predators avoid disaster in the second period and hang on to that 2-1 lead. Now, Carolina comes back. They end up winning the game anyway. But just your thoughts, Joe, on that decision by John Hines, and what did you think of that play? Did you think that was goaltender interference against Carolina?
Well, the last thing, give me another 30 years and I'll start to figure that out. I'd have a better chance of solving a Rubik's Cube in 5 minutes than understanding goalie interference. It will never happen.
Well, you're not alone.
Yeah, it's unattainable for me. But first of all, yeah, it was a gamble, and they had just, of course, been on the kill too. So you're proposing to possibly go right back on it. And look, so it's really interesting to me that C-Mace was like, nah, that's gonna stand. And Pierre McGuire, as soon as they showed the overhead, which I think was actually the first one they showed, maybe that was like the second replay, but he was like immediately like, I don't see how this goal could stand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and doesn't that kind of highlight how difficult it is to determine what in the heck goaltender interference is in the NHL?
I would say so. The way he broke it down is I heard a lot of Canes fans say this, and I think they have a point. You could say really Josi kind of created some of that contact. There were so many people packed in there, but did he impede Saros from doing his job while standing in the crease? I mean, Saros tried to turn left and ran into Fogle. So I've seen stuff like that called. I've seen stuff that I thought was way more than that not called. So I have no idea, but I do know this. Had the Preds closed out that last 7 minutes and 5 seconds of regulation, we'd be talking more about that today than we are, right? I mean, that would be the talk today.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. And a huge decision by John Hines in the course of the game, and it worked out for the Predators at that point. And John Hines talked about his decision to challenge for goaltender interference after the game last night. Here's what Predators head coach John Hines had to say.
Our video staff's great with Lawrence and Andrew. Those guys are, they have a great experience. They're focused guys. They know the rule book in and out. They know what it is. And when it calls in and you're kind of looking at the replay on the bench and see what it is and the confidence that those guys had to make the call, you know, all the credit goes to them. And that's a real big benefit of having guys with that type of experience, attention to detail and knowledge of the rule book. And also, you know, a little bit like Pete Rodgers. You got another two guys in the back room and poise under pressure, focus level, just like Pete Rodgers on the game-winning goal the other night on the bench with the stick with Cunning. So we got a real focus group, players, staff, everyone's ready, and we're really excited here for Game 6.
So that was John Hines after the game last night, pointing out his video staff and the contributions that he's gotten in that area. Great call by the Predators on that play. And like you said, Joe, if that works out and the Predators close out that game last night, that's probably the number one talking point today here on the show. A great call by John Hines to challenge that play. And as we know, officiating and calls have been a big topic of conversation in this series thus far, largely due to Hurricanes coach Rod Brind'Amour after Game 3, essentially calling out the officials, saying that his team is fighting against the referees as well. And as you've said, that call against Carolina last night did not go over well with the Hurricanes faithful. Here's what Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour had to say after Game 5.
Rod, did you get a satisfactory explanation on the goalie interference review on the one that was taken off the board? Kind of what did you see there?
How do I answer that? I want to give you a good answer. Here's the deal. I get why they called the goalie interference. You know, Fogues was there initially, and had that shot come in initially, I think it's goalie interference. But it didn't come initially. So then he gets out, and their guy clearly pushes him and interferes with the goalie. It's not our guy. There's no chance he's making that save anyway. Like, it's going wide, hits our skate, goes in. There needs to be a little more common sense on that, than in my opinion. You know, that's clearly their guy preventing the goalie from making the save, not our guy. So that's my take on it. I got a different explanation, but, you know, it is what it is.
So that was Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour after the game that I guess kind of started in the, man, I really got a lot to say on this part of that answer, but didn't really go into it. And then as it built up, he got going a little bit there. But very clearly, Rod Brind'Amour disagreeing with the conclusion that the officials came to on that goaltender interference call last night, Joe.
Yeah, it was actually funny because, of course, Brind'Amour and Wes McCauley are having a heated argument like they probably did at Michigan State like the bar at happy hour in 1991. I mean, they've been friends forever, and I know McCauley's one of the most respected guys out there, but it's like, you think about that, it's like, gosh, you know, you could make a case for, a different crew, but I don't have a problem with it, but it was just funny to think about that. I do think Brind'Amour, yeah, maybe tone down the officiating. It's interesting, you know, the difference in approach here. You know, Brind'Amour and Hines when it comes to things like this. I mean, I think you could make a case for, like, Brind'Amour. Okay, you've had your beef and you've said it, and maybe you've helped yourself with that. But he doesn't seem to be able to resist, complaining about officiating. And I know some people could say, well, should maybe John Hines should do the same thing? Maybe he should, get out there. I think in a series, usually it's like one side or the other does that.
Yeah.
And then the right play for the other coach is, well, you know, you hope that, like, by not criticizing them, that helps you, you know, like, you can't both be doing it, but Brind'Amour, certainly not shy about it. And also, by the way, you talk about Twitter and Canes fans and everything. I had a great day yesterday tweeting out Poyle's comment from Darren Donick and Chase,
yeah,
saying that he hopes, you know, they get fined, and Canes fans were all a Twitter about that too. So this series, the hockey can't, I'm happy with the hockey going on and on. In some ways, this series can't end soon enough.
Yeah, it's the social media part of this, certainly a lot of fun to deal with. I will say, I've always wanted to see kind of a rivalry between the Predators and the Hurricanes just based on geography and how close they are to each other. We got it this year. I've enjoyed it so far in this playoff series. A lot of saltiness on both sides from the fan base. I kind of dig it. Ryan Poarch with some trolling last night on Twitter as well. Poarch getting into the game here. I like it.
I missed that. What was the trolling?
Well, after the goalie interference, after the goalie interference call, I tweeted out, well, this is going to help Carolina fans think that the NHL isn't against them.
Yeah. Lots of little jabs at Ryan Poarch after that tweet last night, too.
I was trolling a little bit, too, during Game 4 at Rod Brindamore, and the fact that he was whining about the officials after Game 3, which he was. I mean, he was whining about the fact that, the Preds had more power plays?
Yeah.
Like, dude, look at the penalties. Like, half of them that you committed are delay of game penalties. That's black and white.
Yeah, that's nothing to do with the officials.
So...
You got to call it.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, they got away with one.
Look, Brindamore's a great coach. Exactly. Brindamore's a great coach. I chuckled at those comments in Game 3, and I certainly chuckled at the start of his answer there. Was like, how am I going to answer this?
I really want to give you a good answer.
And then he did give a good answer.
Yeah. No, he's great. He's great to deal with. He gets fired up, though. That's a little bit of Spartan blood in there, Rex Road. You can't escape it.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is. I mean, Draymond certainly has complained about an officiating moment here or there in his career. So, yeah, maybe that's what it is. I mean, I whine about stuff all the time. I hadn't even thought about these ties that bind all of us. So, there you go.
Maybe that's what it is.
I complain about my kids.
Oh, there is that. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Predators and the Hurricanes. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, Roman, how do you guys process having the opportunities to close this game out and take a huge advantage in the series, and then it all flipping so subtly and now being in the exact opposite position?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough loss for us. I mean, I think in the third we kind of were in control of the game, and obviously they score. And then, like I said before, it's such a tight series. There's a lot of chances on both sides, and they just found a way to score in OT tonight. And it's a tough loss for us, but we're still in the series. And like I said, we got to go home and win one.
That was Predators captain Roman Josi after the game last night. A tough loss for the Predators, now trailing 3-2 in the series against Carolina. Coming back home for Game 6 tomorrow night. Puck drop at 8:30 tomorrow night. Pre-game at 7:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That'll be fun.
Are you sure puck drop isn't at like 10 o'clock?
I'm not sure.
I had this thought last night when overtime started at like 10:05 or 10:10, whatever that time was. I'm like, oh, okay, well, in 48 hours... It's going to be in the second period.
In the second period. Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Joe, looking forward to that.
Well, hey, the thing is, it's like people around here are like, oh, my gosh, it's so late. You know, it's not going to get over until whatever, midnight or so. I mean, Carolina's in the Eastern time zone.
I know.
So, hey, Carolina Hurricanes fans, we're the NHL, and we really want to serve you. So here. This game starts at 9:45 on a weeknight for you. Enjoy.
Have fun with that, buddy.
Thanks, NHL.
Like, what's so wrong with them pulling off what they did last night? It's the same two games.
I don't know. That's a great question. Well,
so apparently now Thursday they have to have totally separate TV slots. They haven't been doing that yet, but now Thursday you have to have that. Is it because it's so late in the season?
I guess.
Don't ask me, man. I don't know.
I thought maybe we were going to get through a playoff series without one of these, and then here we are, Game 6, 8:30 puck drop. Looking forward to that coming up tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan from Hermitage, who wants to weigh in. Ryan, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Morning, guys. Honestly, the guys played a great game last night. I mean, they had several chances in the third period to finish it out. They got to come back, win Game 6, and then we'll see what happens in 7. But they've got to finish some of them chances. Like Johansson had that chance in the, between the circles and the slot to put it. He skied it. You had a couple 2-on-1s that they just missed on. And Jankrok on the power play, on this count, you got to take that one-timer. He hesitated on taking that one-timer, and that could have been a possible power play goal right there. And he hesitated on it, and the Gophers got over, and he made the save. So, I mean, just got to keep pushing. I know we can do this, and we've done won 6 and 7. We've won game 6 and game 7 before, so, I mean, we'll see what happens. And, Robbie, please go back to the beach.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that. I'll see if I can make that happen. I wasn't going to bring that up today, but I will say, when the Predators are playing in the playoffs this year and I'm at the beach, 2-0, when I'm not, 0-3. Rex Road, you be the judge.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm sure there's someone out there who, like, sat on the left side of the couch accidentally and you know, instead of the right side, or, you know, didn't wear the right mismatched socks or whatever the case may be. So, I think you can be forgiven for – although, I mean, I think there's a better case to just be on the beach, you know, permanently. But,
yeah, agreed.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring it up either.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be. See if we can make that happen. Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe texting in, gut punch is the perfect way to describe this, but the difference we're seeing in how the Preds are playing in the Canes gives me belief that we can force a game 7 where anything can happen. Hines has this team believing like never before. I think we see Johansson, Duchesne, and Forsberg elevate and put some pucks in the net and force a game 7. So this coming from Joe on our text line. Has some faith that the Predators come back tomorrow. They get it done, and they force a game 7 going back to Raleigh.
There's some sunshine.
Yeah.
You know, look, there's a lot to like about what they're doing. I kind of half expected Carolina, maybe even a little more than half expected Carolina to just kind of reassert themselves last night.
Yep.
You know, and maybe get a couple quick ones early and kind of say, okay, you know, this we are the better team. And it really didn't happen. Now, again, they get all credit for those clutch plays that they made. Got a lot of good players, and some of those guys stepped up big time for them. Slavin's back in now. You see he does make a difference. Stahl has been just great in this series.
Yes.
You know, so they get credit for that. But I do think you can look at this and say, well, the Preds seem to be gaining footing. What does that mean for tomorrow night? I don't know, but it doesn't. I thought a lot of, you know, games 3 and 4, the Preds had some, they buried some chances and they kept the pressure on the scoreboard, but I, you know, they didn't really carry the play a ton, not, you know, really in Nashville over a lot of minutes of hockey, and they did last night.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Rod in Clarksville, not Rod in Raleigh, Rod in Clarksville, texting in saying, how many number one centers would have scored on Johansson's look in the third? I love the effort, but the Preds are going to need to retool for next year. I mean, if they...
We're never far from it. We're never far from it.
I was going to say, like, that's always going to find a way to circle back to that conversation if the Predators don't get it done here against Carolina. And look, Ryan Johansson was great in games 3 and 4. I thought he was one of the best players on the ice for the Predators. That's a play last night, and, you know, maybe it's unfair to expect him to convert every time in that scenario, but you're paid $8 million. At least put that shot on net. Like, that's a play last night. You're hoping your number one center can convert for you.
At least make Nedeljkovic make a save.
Yeah, exactly.
And not fire it wide. Also, that line I did not think was as effective.
I agree.
And no. I think it's obvious through 5 games that the last change is pivotal in this series.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, it's interesting because I think the way the Preds played, you got to bear those chances, right? But I think like the way they played, you could make a case that this lineup is good. It's going to be interesting to see if and what Hines does, you know, differently for game 6. Because usually there's some kind of thing that you do after a loss. And I agree that line was not as good, but I don't think that I'd mess with it at this point. I don't know about you guys.
No, I'm keeping it together in game 6. At this point, I think you just ride with it in game 6, and it's on those guys to make a play for you. And if they don't, then what Rod's talking about, I mean, I think some of these same conversations will come back up if the offseason happens and you're not able to get it done in game 6. But To me, I'm still going back with Johansson, Forsberg, and Duchesne in game six and hoping they can make a play for you. Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, did we ever find out what Matt Benning got called for in the first period? That was a bit of a strange play. Luke Cunningham gets tangled up over there in the corner. My guess is since Benning was the third guy coming in, he's the one that got handed the penalty. Like that's my guess.
Yeah, that's what Hines said after the game. Third man in was the, you know, the explanation. Like, and to me, it's like, eh. I mean, I didn't think he came in and did anything other than, you know, I didn't think he came in flying in like sometimes third guy in. It's like obvious. Okay, right. You know, that's got. But I also thought that the whole thing should have just been a cross check on Cunningham, and then that's a power play anyway.
Right.
You know, so the way that now what happens in a situation like that though is like that's sort of a common sense outcome, which is great. But that's where like you should be able to have a common sense outcome for like the high stick, you know, in game four, right? Like there should be a mechanism for a common sense ruling there, and there isn't, and so. This is why people are frustrated with officiating and at times the rules that they have to enforce.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the Predators. What stings the most from last night's game in Raleigh, North Carolina? What missed chance do you look back on as the one that cost the game for the Predators? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, the Predators had some chances last night. Yakov Trenin scores two goals, or at one point, as Pierre McGuire referred to him, Yakub Trenov last night. That was something. Had a couple of those last night on the national broadcast. Had some chances last night for the Predators. Ryan Johansson, a big chance in front of that. Our buddy Vince on Twitter points out, says, the missed chance that I think cost him the game was Johansson's wide open in front of the goalie that he missed badly that we've talked about here today on the show. Joe, as you look at this game last night for the Predators, whether it's a missed chance offensively, whether it's a play that wasn't made defensively, or in goal, which play, which kind of moment in this game stands out to you the most that's the biggest gut punch, do you think, today for Preds fans?
I still think it's the Natchez goal, you know. And, again, it's a combination. It's a combination of credit to him and the Canes, but also the Preds had just – they had gone – I would say at that point, it was starting to get – you know, a little frantic, a little bit like, wow, look at that clock melt away. I'd say it had been a good, not that there weren't chances, but 6-7 minutes of just sort of like, ooh, the Preds are really salting this away now. And they've kind of got them, you know? And you've seen that happen before. You've seen it happen before where the team gets frustrated and then the team with the lead buries one of these chances and the Preds had some. And it's over. And, of course, you've seen the team behind come up with a dramatic play. I just think that moment, you know, there are just a lot of different people who could have done different things there. And again, even I think if Saros, it just gets his normal push off the post there, I think he's there for that. Right. So there's a lot of things that had to kind of add up. Yes. The biggest factor is that kid is a bullet and he just shot all through the neutral zone and right around. Beautiful play by him, but there are a lot of different Predators, starting with like if just Forsberg just, you know, combines with Johansson there and gets a stick on that puck, you know, who knows what happens from there, but that play doesn't happen. And then there's other people that to me was the moment. It's not like I can't sit here and say like I knew that the Canes were going to win then, but they were not creating a ton at that point. And the clock was starting to really get late. And I just, you know, you're talking about 53 minutes of doing something in that building the Preds had not done all season long.
Yep.
Just really stifling that team. And that team at full strength, by the way.
Yeah, no, it was a huge moment because not only, you know, Forsberg and the play that you described there, But it just felt like before that, the energy was just starting to get zapped out of the building. I mean, there was frustration in the crowd. I thought there was some pretty visible frustration from the players on the ice, from the Hurricanes as well. They just couldn't get anything going.
Well, I thought Warren Fogle took a frustration penalty.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Early in the third with that elbow.
Yeah.
To Benning's face. So
right to the chops, yeah.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge play in that game, and that stands out for sure. We've talked a lot about the Johansson play. I still go back to that Roman Josi chance where he's got the puck in the slot. I mean, that's exactly what you're waiting for. The game's 2-2 at that point. That's what you're waiting for. You've got a chance there if you're Roman Josi. He doesn't pull the trigger. He tries to go back towards the middle and find Forsberg in the middle there. Nobody connects on the pass. And it was funny, like, looking at Twitter right after that play happens because of the educational beacon that we can all be on Twitter sometimes. There's just a straight line of people saying, shoot the puck. Like, in different forms, sometimes they added a few four-letter words in there as well. Just shoot the puck. And that was, I think, the collective shout of Predators fans last night to Roman Josi is to shoot the puck in that situation. I mean, you can think about the Yarncroke play as well. And I know, like I know, and we've already got some of it today on our text line as well, a popular play that's going to be discussed a lot today is the penalty on Alex Carrier and making it 4-on-4 in the overtime. The Predators had a power play where they really weren't able to get much going in the limited time that they did have the power play. And then it gets evened up 4-on-4 on what I thought was a pretty weak call by the officials. And you talked about it earlier, Joe. You're in a situation there where it's a 5-on-4 power play for the Predators. If that situation is 5-on-5 and that exact play happens between Aho and Carrier, probably not making the call. That's just my guess. We'll never be able to prove that, but you're probably not making that call at that point. And it is always fascinating to me that you talk about referees and not wanting to decide games, and oftentimes by not wanting to decide games, they end up playing a part in deciding games as well. So it's a tough balance to strike as an official.
Yeah. We know how it goes. I mean, look, we know that for one thing, a lot of ticky-tack penalties that will be called other times of the game are not going to be called late. And yeah, I mean, I think to me it was like, and you see this, if there is a penalty they feel compelled to call in a situation like that, if they have a chance to even things up, they'll be like, okay, we'll take that one.
Yeah.
And that's what that whole thing felt like. I mean, again, in the moment, I didn't see it. There's the replays out there of Aho. And I mean, he's looking for, you know, for somebody. He sees Carrier, and I mean, it's hilarious, really. He just kind of backs in and falls over.
I mean, it was an impressive dive. It was good.
I mean, that's one of those plays also. If you do call it at some other time in the game, you know, second period or whatever, you might be calling two minors. I mean, you might be calling Carrier and calling the embellishment.
What'd you say in your athletic piece? Didn't you say he put the cell in embellishment, the S-E-L-L? It's pretty good.
S-E-L-L. Yeah. Thank you.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I can spell.
Yes.
I will also say that Granlund sold the hold.
Oh, yeah.
The first penalty that was called.
Sure.
I had some people on Twitter disagree with me on that, but I mean, there was an extra waving of the arm by Granlund on that hold call. So that felt like the classic makeup call that every fan hates.
Look, there have been some sell jobs in this series. I mean, Josi, and I can't remember if it was game three or game four, but Josi got tripped behind the net. And it hit him basically in the knee pad. And Roman Josi, normally not going down in that situation. I thought he did some selling on that too. And look, I said this to begin the show. We can talk about the officials. And yes, that was a bad call on Alex Carrier. I also thought the Predators got away with about four penalties in the third period. I mean, Colton Sissons high sticked somebody right in the face and nothing was called.
And Sissons also tripped.
Yeah.
Either Niederreiter or Aho. Niederreiter?
Niederreiter.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right, yeah, no question. I mean, and I hear you on Granlund. He sold it. No, but if you're the official there, the hook was just so easy to see, and yeah, it did impede him. He's going in for the, you know. I mean, it's.
But how many times, Joe, did that happen in the two overtime games that we saw here. Like the in the Stanley Cup playoff overtimes, everybody will say that's not a call that you typically make in overtime. So anyway.
Yeah. Look, it's not easy. I mean, we all should recognize that it is a very tough job because these players are they're trying to find every little edge they can, and there's going to be a lot of people trying to make things look worse than they are. The stuff is fast. It's hard, and the rules sometimes are confusing. But they're too much of the story, you know.
Yeah.
They need to be less of the story.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Garland texting in saying, "Was I happy about the loss last night? No. However, people complaining this morning about making changes, getting rid of players because they missed a shot last night. Get a grip. We're given maybe the second best team in the NHL." More than anyone or they have expected, we outplayed them. Just one play. Hindsight is always 20/20. I think some good perspective from Garland there. And look, Joe, I'll say this. You're coming back. You're down 3-2. That's not a position you want to be in if you're the Predators. I also think the Predators have got some pretty good confidence coming back in here that they feel like they can get the job done in Game 6 and force a Game 7. And once you get to Game 7, who knows what can happen in Game 7.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's John Hines certainly was, hey, great opportunity ahead. You know, you wipe it clean and you move forward. I would have to think that it'd be a little bit tough this morning for the Preds, given what they managed to do and what they were so close to pulling off. But yep. That's one of the good things about the playoff series. When it's every other day. You know, they're not going to skate today. The Preds put that out there this morning. Nick Bronowski put that out there. They're not going to skate today. You just have to wipe the slate. As far as the comment there on perspective, I agree. But again, let's not pretend like people are saying move on from a player because of one play, right? I mean, this has been the one of the storylines for a long time. So there is something to. And it's just like with Duchene and Johansson in Game 3 and 4. It's like, hey, if this is when you're going to play your best, you know what? Better that than some great regular season, and then you go Casper in the postseason. But can you sustain it? Can you keep doing it? I don't think they're going to win this series unless those guys get back to producing and making those plays when they're presented to them.
Ryan Porth, what do you think about a Game 7 on Saturday? How's that sound to you?
Sounds intriguing. That's one way to put it. That's the first word that came to mind.
It's probably a good way to put it for you.
If anybody listening going on doesn't Saturday, know, do I'm having my wedding celebration on Saturday. So, you know, we originally scheduled the wedding in 2020 for late June so that, a cup run for the Preds wouldn't interfere with it.
Looking like you could be a busy man on Saturday.
Could be.
It's going to be fun.
Could be.
We'll continue the discussion on the Predators when we come back. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on the Predators and the Hurricanes on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Our buddy Nate on Twitter says, have Porth's groomsmen feeding him some scores through earpieces if there ends up being a Game 7 for the wedding. What do you think about that idea?
All right, I'll
feed you some scores.
So here is what has been agreed upon between myself and my significant other about what will happen Saturday night at the reception. And that is there will be a TV that will be there for the guests to be able to watch Game 7.
All right.
And I have been told that that TV is for the guests and not for me.
Oh, okay. So, not going to be much viewing of Game 7.
So we'll see.
We'll see what happens on that front. Rex Rod, this is a precarious situation for Porth.
Do you have like a at the? I don't know. There's like tables where you eat, but can I throw in like a little desk too and bring my laptop in there?
Sure.
The reception
is sure.
Is that acceptable? I mean, yeah. I can dance. Like, I'll dance during the intermission.
Look, apparently you can do whatever you'd like. Brian Poore is not going to be allowed to approach this television at the wedding. So looking forward to that.
Well, I volunteer to be part of the crew, making sure that you don't watch any of it. You know, so yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a team effort to make sure you do not give a single glance to that television.
Well, the wiggle room is glances, and if there's another game in overtime that perhaps I can go over for a couple of minutes and watch. But yeah.
Okay, here's a question. Is there absolutely no chance that this could be a day game Saturday?
I have a hard time. I can't remember the last time that a game 7 was during the day, like in the NHL.
I can't either.
Now, I don't know what the NBC time slots are for like national. I would assume that they would want a game 7 on national NBC. But if they don't have a time slot on Saturday, then maybe it's on NBC Sports Network. I don't think it would be like a 2 o'clock start. I just don't. But that is the best case scenario in this situation.
Yeah. Well, sure.
Because the ceremony's at 1 p.m. and it'll be done by 2. And then there is a party bus situation going on for the wedding party between the ceremony and the reception. Robbie's having way too much fun with this. Where I think that would be the best chance to be able to watch the game 7, at least for me. And the guests that are at the ceremony can go watch the game and then come to the reception after. So if Gary Bettman is listening, please schedule game 7 on Saturday for 2 p.m.
So really what you're saying is that, I mean, that goal by Jordan Staal last night caused you a lot of problems.
Yeah. Like
it did. It caused you some problems.
Yeah. It was a gut punch in multiple facets.
So you need every other seer, and I don't know exactly what times out to which day, but you need everything else to be extended.
Well, I think the only other one on Saturday is Toronto Montreal, and I don't have much confidence that that's going to a game 6.
It's not going to 7.
No, that's a game 6.
That's not going to 6.
It's not going to 6.
Yeah, that one's done.
So this looks like it would be the only game.
Unless let's say Vegas wins tonight and they want to start Vegas Colorado on Saturday. What's the other one tonight? If New York
Pittsburgh
beats Pittsburgh, yeah, and they want to start Bruins Islanders on Saturday, I guess they could do that.
Either way, it's not looking good for Ryan Porth right now.
Well, look, they've already like said we don't care if like Carolina fans can watch the game 6.
That is true.
We'll start that at 10 o'clock. Maybe if those series, you know, are ready to go, they'd be like, put that game 7 on in a day. I'm saying there's a chance. not a very good one.
I guarantee you what will happen. And this just like the Thursday 8:30 start is going to tick me off even more. And I was pretty ticked off at the 8:30 start, and I explained to Robbie during the break as to why. But I guarantee you that they will put Bruins Islanders on at 2 o'clock, yep, on NBC.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll start round 2 before they end round 1. You're exactly and they'll right. put game 7 at night.
Yep, that'll be exactly what happens, I guarantee it, as they move forward. So at least you got that to look forward to coming up on Saturday.
And I want everybody to know, like, I like definitely want the Preds to win tomorrow night. Like, I will be there, I will be rooting on the Preds, and then if it happens, the collateral damage will be Saturday night reception with a game 7 on the TV.
Maybe pretty severe arguments at the wedding as well. We'll see what happens on that front. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brandon from Spring Hill texting in. How mad would Hines be if the NHL fines Aho the maximum allowable for embellishment, even though it wasn't called during the game? Would he get a pass at calling out the officiating like Brendan Moore did after game 3?
Like I said earlier, I think I was trying to think about this yesterday. Like, I'm sure it's happened to some extent, but usually in a playoff series, if there's a whining of, you know, whatever, complaining about the officials, coach, usually the other coach takes the other route, right? Like, well, okay, you can't get into like, no, I think they suck more than you think they suck, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I let these guys do the job. I don't, you know. So now I also think Hines is probably not going to be a guy over the years that like we hear complain about calls much. You know, it just seems like that's just more his approach. Like, what's really the benefit? But I think certainly when you're in a series and the other coach has gone out there like that, the best play is to go to go zag when he zigs, right? So that's not going
to
happen.
To a certain degree, I will say, after the second penalty call in game four and John Hines was screaming on the bench at the officials and pointing to Rod Brind'Amour, my thought process was, maybe if you're John Hines, say something in the postgame press conference. That was that probably would have been the way I would have handled that at that point. Now, I think the story has changed a little bit since then. But, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he's obviously upset. It's not like, you know, not talking about this stuff after the game means he's all fine with everything. I mean, you can see it at moments. And you're going to see it. I mean, in a seven-game series, there are going to be bad calls that infuriate you as a coach. But I don't know that I don't think there's a benefit to just mimicking what the other guy did. You know, I'm not even sure. I think Brind'Amour got a little bit of a benefit early in the next game, and that's about it, right?
Yeah. I think somebody's on the phone with Porth getting him wedding day advice at the moment. This is going good. Well. So at
least this is Wayne and Spring Hill on the phone with me right now.
At least we've been very helpful in the program so far. Stu on Twitter says, the most painful thing from last night, number one, not bearing our grade A chances, and two, Duchesne not keeping his legs moving on the game-tying goal. So Duchesne receiving some heat today on Natchez's goal. I didn't have that big of an issue with Duchesne last night on that play.
No, you could argue that he was the least offending of the five. You really could.
Yeah,
he was the guy who happened to be there, but he tried to compensate for what others didn't do right before that.
When we come back, we will switch gears. We'll get into the Julio Jones discussion surrounding the Tennessee Titans. There's a lot of noise around Julio Jones right now in the NFL. Is this a move worth going all in for if you're John Robinson and the Tennessee Titans? We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.